Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
What a great day to switch on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. Today we have our very special guest. He's also a part of the show. You're going to hear him in just a little while. Jeremy Kent, who is our European desk correspondent. Of course, advertising and marketing on that side of the pond. And he's with us every week in a recorded segment, but we've got him live this week as a representative of not only his role here on The Advertising Show, but as a participant in a great organization called the Brand Council. He's the CEO of the Brand Council, so we'll get a chance to talk to Jeremy about that. From London, spanning the globe, is what I'd like to say. But anyway, it's good. We've got Jeremy coming up here in just a little bit, and Gene Bliss a little bit later on as well, with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. How the heck are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing great, and you and I both discussed. I thought it would be of interest to our listeners to learn a little bit more about Jeremy, since he's going to be an ongoing regular contributor to the show, and learn that he does more than just report on marketing and advertising and branding stories throughout Europe. He's actually a practitioner, as you just set up through mentioning Jeremy. He's a practitioner in our industry and a wonderful contributor to our program. So I'm looking forward to chatting with him today. Ray, I want to remind our listeners that they can also join us on Twitter or Facebook. Check us out, Jeremy. Jeremy's weighing in on our Twitter as well. And of course, Veronji and Ariel with The Advertising Show just do a bang-up job in making sure our social media channels are well connected with the rest of the world.
And now that we've got that covered, let's go out for a light beer, okay? Or a low-calorie
no,
beer. Really, no, really. This is of interest to me, of interest to you as well. I got to tell you something. I'm not a big fan of light beer. I'm not a big fan of the Select 55 or the Ultra or the Coors Light or anything. But I think it's an interesting subject, and it's all of a sudden becoming a big arena for competition for the brewers, makers of Miller Lite, Select 55, Coors Light, Ultra, Bud Light, and Miller Genuine Draft. You know, the 64-calorie beers and less are they're pretty hot to trot. And what they're suggesting is now, basically, they're positioning themselves as an active lifestyle beer. Now, frankly, I would, you know, I don't necessarily agree, although in one instance, Brad, I've kind of gotten away from the margaritas because they're so ridiculously high in calories and all the other garbage that goes along with that, and have been introduced to chiladas. Yeah. Now, if you've never had a chilada before, one chilada goes a long way.
I have not.
If you combine that.
I have not. Tell me what is that?
A chilada, you put some ice in the glass, you pour one of your favorite light beers in there as well. In my case, it'd probably be the Ultra. And you also mix in some of your favorite, and I do mean high-end Bloody Mary mix, and put salt on the rim and some limes in there as well, and you have something that is incredibly refreshing, wonderfully tasty, and you're not talking 800, 1,000 calories for consuming one of these things. You know, it's not as unhealthy as you would normally have, and I got to tell you, if you get a good mix of Bloody Mary to go along with that light beer, it's a doggone good little drink. So consequently, I've switched. But that, only in that case, that's the way I'll drink the light beer. Put some Bloody Mary mix in there. So try it sometime. It's actually pretty doggone good. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, check check that sodium content on your Bloody Mary mix. It may be surprisingly high for you.
Well, that's true. So I'll buy the low sodium Bloody Mary mix.
Using the light beer as a diuretic, so you may be okay.
That's exactly right. Here on the Beer Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe, we have Jeremy Kent coming your way live here in just a few moments. But Jeremy is also joining us, as he does weekly, recorded with a feature that he puts together for us as part of our European correspondent desk. And always some great stuff in terms of content. And it really is neat to be able to get kind of a European perspective of what is going on in advertising, considering the fact that the advertising show is indeed a European show. So it's all good, and we've got Jeremy coming up right now, live in just a few moments. Stay with us.
Hello, and welcome to the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. This week, consumer media spend is down, but consumption is up. Sky TV ups its online reach, and Pepsi's new digital campaign continues a soccer theme in a Coca-Cola World Cup year. KPMG's latest media and entertainment barometer shows that British consumers are spending more time online and watching TV, but they are spending less on media. But digital media consumption over the same period leapt from 6.25 hours to 7.5 hours. According to the 6-monthly report, the average spend on traditional media fell from around $14 in September last year to just over $11 in March of this year, and digital media spend dropped by 50%. To $1.50. However, digital media consumption over the same period leapt from 6.25 hours to 7.5 hours. Consumption of traditional media was also up from 11 hours 40 minutes to 12 hours 13 minutes. With the debate on paywalls around news sites still raging, the research conducted by YouGov found that people are more prepared to pay for music and films than they are for TV and newspapers. Consumers have come to expect free news content online, and a rise in the uptake of free newspapers sees 21% of readers paying nothing for their paper, compared with just 15%. 6 months ago. 88% of British people now access content online, but only 10% of non-subscribers would consider paying for it. Interestingly, 16 to 24-year-olds are more likely to pay for online content than older age groups, and 43% of all consumers stated a preference for traditional media, with 25% opting for digital. As media companies seek to reach consumers through their preferred platform, satellite broadcaster Sky TV has announced plans to offer its internet TV service through integrated set-top boxes this summer. The new service will provide Sky subscribers with access to a range of live channels and video-on-demand services over the internet. According to Sky's CEO, Jeremy Darroch, this is about ensuring that customers can access content on their terms. The Soccer World Cup finals in South Africa kick off in just a few weeks, and Coca-Cola is an official sponsor. However, a new digital campaign developed by OMD London for Pepsi sets out to grab a share of what promises to be a great summer of soccer. The campaign will run in 14 markets in Europe, the Middle East and South America, and features 8 top soccer stars. In addition to a dedicated Pepsi microsite, the campaign will run across the entire Microsoft advertising portfolio, including Xbox, Hotmail and MSN channels. From London, this is Jeremy Kent for The Advertising Show.
And back on The Advertising Show, live, in person, and truly wonderful to have Jeremy with us here. Jeremy Kent, a senior communications and marketing professional with a proven track record of successful campaigns for a wide variety of clients in fast-moving consumer goods, financial services, and B2B environments. Now, you know Jeremy is our European correspondent. You hear him, as you heard, weekly here at The Advertising Show. And today we get to talk to Jeremy on behalf of the Brand Council. TheBrandCouncil.com is the website. Jeremy is the CEO of the Brand Council. And Jeremy, I got to tell you, what a blast to have the opportunity to chat with you live and in person here. And we got to tell you, too, as well, a lot of great feedback on the features. People love you, and it's good to have you here at the Advertising Show. So with that said, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I thought it would be of interest to our listeners to know that Jeremy's more than just a provider of news and information from the world of marketing throughout Europe, but it's actually somebody that has a job in this business. And to take this opportunity to chat a little bit about what you can share with our audience, at least North American audience, that they don't know about what goes on in your world every day. And I think a great setup to that is some conversation that you and I and Ray have had off the air, and that is about the simple task, we might consider it simple in North America, the simple task of marketing to consumers in the 50 U.S. states, and yet it's quite an expensive undertaking when it comes to marketing across Europe, and even a more challenging process involved in producing an effective pan-European, I should say, campaign. Talk a little bit about that, Jeremy.
Well, you're right. I mean, the United States has a wonderful homogeneous market. So you've got 300 million people pretty much speaking the same language, common currency, common set of values, and for the most part, a common set of laws. With the European Union, it's nothing like that at all. It couldn't get more heterogeneous. We've got different cultures, different languages, and generally what you find is that a pan-European campaign just doesn't work. So just before I came on the air, watching through the TV commercials here, one came up for Maybelline, which is actually a U.S. production, U.S. accents, everything else, and it goes down fine in the U.K. because the cultures aren't that different. But to try and do something like that to go pan-European, it just won't happen. And those campaigns that try it, by the time they've tried to put in a bit of British humor, a bit of French sophistication, German functionality, it falls flat in every market. And usually the TV companies, the TV comedy shows, start to take a little bit of fun with it when it comes on air. So Ferrero Rocher is the classic over here. Everybody laughs at the ads. And that's given it more of a brand value than the ads were ever intended to do.
Really?
And yet you travel yourself. I know we were talking the other day. You've jumped over to Ireland for a soccer match, and traveling other parts of Europe is not unusual in your world. You know, we hear so much over here about global brands and global brand managers, et cetera, and we tend to think that there's this global message that's going across Europe and around the world that is consistent and similar in execution and messaging, et cetera. But yet, that's not the case. Do you see a difference just even as close as Ireland for products being promoted in the UK, or is it consistent across all of the UK? And then also, what about when you jump over to Paris or Italy? Do you see a vast difference in how a brand is being promoted there versus your homeland of the UK?
Yes, you do. There are global brands, and obviously there is global messaging, but it still needs to be adapted and tailored for the local market. So anything that runs in the US will usually run pretty well over here, or where I used to live in Australia and New Zealand, without much of a problem. But even just moving it to France, then what we say as a tagline, if you translate it directly into French, it might not mean anything at all. So your global tagline needs to change as well, or it needs to be well thought out for all the markets you're going to be in before the campaign ever breaks. And that always ends up with a compromise.
Hmm. Yeah, you would see similarities in your neighboring Ireland or Scotland, et cetera. It'd be the same exact spot.
There's not a big difference between Ireland and the UK. And I think a lot of Irish television is self-produced, and they've got their own channels, but they also pick up UK channels as well over there. But again, those two cultures are fairly close, and there's probably going to be an awful lot of Irishmen jumping up and down at this point, but the cultures aren't that different. But if you go 20 miles the other way, into France, Belgium, and off up into Germany, it's hugely different. That line on the map really means something.
What about on to Australia and such? The differences there, obviously, too, or what?
Yeah, there are. I would say that Australia is closer to the UK than either of them are to the US. And that has more to do with the fact that you guys had your independence a long time before the Aussies did. So a lot of their laws and a lot of their sports remain common to those that we play up here. So there's a lot of sporting cultural links. And most of our kids, when they get to university age and they're taking a year off, that gap year, will head down under. And the same with their guys. I'm told some staggering figure that London's the second largest city for Kiwis after Auckland, and like the third or fourth largest city for Aussies.
It seems that Europe and in general has a much more avant-garde or risque look at commercials and how they present them. In other words, they're taking it a little bit farther than here in the United States. How do you see that?
Well, that's true, and the French have done that for many years. It used to be something we'd all enjoy on the TV commercial shows at the end of the year, seeing what the French had been up to. But, yeah, it is a little bit more brand-orientated and above the line rather than pushing a sales price for the most part. But that changes with each brand that you work with each client. There are some that are out there right now just hammering home one message, And they always remind me of a guy I used to see when I was working in New York, a chap called Crazy Eddie on the TV. And that was just hard sell, hard sell, hard sell, but it worked. Yeah. It's a question of getting it right.
As we wrap up this segment, Jeremy, let's shift gears just for a moment and talk a little bit about politics. We all live in an age of pop idol politics. We've got our Sarah Palin, if you will. I know, my goodness, the president of France.
And her Tea Party. Don't forget that, Brad. Yes, exactly.
President of France has a wonderful first lady. I'm sure all of Europe's eyes are focused on her. And yet, I understand there was an unusual event that took place just recently in politics in the UK, an event that was that's commonplace in the U.S., a TV debate among politicians. Talk a little bit about that as we wrap up this segment.
Okay, this is the first year. I mean, you're 40 years ahead of us, and we have just had our first TV debate between the party leaders for those standing for to be prime minister.
Wow.
It's never happened before, and you can see why the incumbent prime minister wouldn't want to go for it, because he is the big guy, and the leader of the opposition is challenging his position. And what we've got here is a three-party system. So there's a chap called Nick Clegg who runs a party that polls usually less than 20% of the popular vote. But because he was just big enough to get onto the debates, his presence there just elevated his standing. And because nobody really knew him and he was the clean guy, it suddenly turned our whole political race on its head. Where we were looking at a potential Tory government, they were getting about 40% of the polls were predicting a voting for Tory, about 30-odd for Labour, and then Nick Clegg's Liberal Democrats were about 18-19. He came out of that debate standing really tall. So all of a sudden, we've got two or three polls that are now showing the Liberal Democrats ahead. They probably won't get in, but that one TV debate has changed the whole relationship.
Wow. Anybody sweating on the debate, as in the Nixon Kennedy debates going back to the early 60s? That was quite interesting as well. We've got Jeremy Kent here, our very special guest. Jeremy is, in addition to being our European correspondent for the Advertising Show, is also the CEO of the Brand Council. And we'll talk more about that as we continue our conversation. We hope to stay right here at the Advertising Show with Rain Brad.
We didn't create Rebus, the best advertising agency software application, overnight. It took us about 20 years of refinement, with the help of over 400 of our customers worldwide. From CRM estimating and timesheet entry to a full accounting package, Rebus Software is a fully integrated and user-friendly platform that will make your staff more efficient and your agency more profitable. And because Rebus is an energetic, multilingual, and multicultural company, we can respond quickly to your specific needs, from the U.S. to the U.K., Spain, Italy, and Australia. Rebus, refined and proven effective by advertising agencies around the world. Want to find out how Rebus can work for your agency? Schedule a live online demo right now. Go to rebus-software.com. rebus-software.com. The live online demo is free. The results go directly to your agency's bottom line. rebus-software.com.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Hey, Columbus, we can't turn back without an order from you.
I'm not talking while the flavor lasts.
What are you chewing?
Beech nut gum? We could be...
Jeremy Kent with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth here at The Advertising Show. Jeremy is our European correspondent, a regular feature on the show every week, and today we have him in person here. Jeremy, welcome back. Nice to have you here.
Great to be back.
Yeah. Hey, Jeremy, talk a little bit about the Brand Council. A lot of our listeners may be unfamiliar with what exactly you do and some of your clients. Share with us what goes on in your life these days.
Okay. Well, we're about 10 years old, and we set the business up very much at a digital core to what we were doing. We also came out of most of the big agencies around town, and we had a view when we were in the big ad agencies that we could just do anything. We could. If you wanted 300 people on the street tomorrow, we could just do that. But usually we had a situation where we talked to a client and it would always come back to TV advertising. If they wanted to do PR, we had another agency within the group, but it was 5 miles across town with another photocopier and another receptionist and so on. So what we decided with the Brand Council was that we would bring public relations and advertising together. Now, they don't always sit bang on the money on top of each other, but public relations can really benefit from the strategic planning that advertising enjoys, and the advertising guys can benefit from some of the tactical flexibility that public relations brings. So the agency sits very much in that above-the-line, brand-driven area, but we're totally media neutral. We always have been. We work online, offline, you know, right across the board. But that's where we specialize, on the line and above the line.
Well, I know you guys, you yourself, Brand Council, uses social media. We at the Advertising Show are on Twitter as well as Facebook, et cetera. And although social media is a big deal these days, there's no denying that, you suggest don't write off TV just yet. Talk a little bit about that, Jeremy.
Let's go back to that TV debate with the three-party leaders. The following day, Nick Clegg had gone from nowhere to a prospective prime minister, and that's the power of television. There were 10 million viewers. Now, I know that figure doesn't sound big compared with your population, but that's 10 million viewers out of a population of 60 million. So the other thing we found was an awful lot of headlines about Twitter breaking all records. Twitter was receiving 30 tweets per second. But when they actually crunched those numbers down, it was 36,500 tweets and 46,000 people tweeting. Now, those figures sound great for Twitter, but it's tiny compared with 10 million. And the 10 million was the audience that swung that really could make something happen. So I love Twitter. I'm on it. I think it's great fun. It shouldn't be ignored. It's an important part of any campaign going forward. But I think certainly over here we get an awful lot of evangelists saying Twitter, Twitter, Twitter's everything and television's dying, it's dead. And I don't believe that's the case. Television is the shared experience with the family. We've got the Soccer World Cup coming up. People aren't going to be sitting around their PCs to Twitter to each other. They're going to be in the pubs, clubs, with their friends at home watching the games. So I think it's a bit early to say TV's finished.
You know, it'll be interesting to see what impact social media will have following up to the TV event having such an impact on the political landscape there in the UK. Maybe we can chat about that in weeks to come. Speaking of changing media landscapes, it's a great time to be and an exciting time to be in the advertising and media business with all of the variety of traditional and new media choices that are around. You say the PR industry is best placed to take advantage of these changes, yet lacks the confidence to do so. What do you mean by that, Jeremy?
Quite simply, I think that most of the social media, not all of it, most of it, is very much a PR function. And I know the search engine optimization companies are in there pushing hard and staying with the media buying guys, but I believe PR is best place to handle it because they're used to engaging with journalists, engaging with an audience across the written word and the conversation that comes from it. The problem that I've seen with PR, and I've spent a long time in this industry, half of it in public relations, half of it in advertising, is that when we go into a creative session on the advertising side, money's no object. You're out there for a big idea. You want to find a big idea that you can pin everything else on. Whereas quite often what happens in a brainstorming session within a public relations agency is the first thing they'll say is, what's the client's budget? It's X. And they immediately limit their thinking to the budget rather than expanding out for that big idea and then wondering how you're going to price it up afterwards. And that's what I mean by a lack of confidence. It's a lack of belief that their ideas could go forward to the client and make a big difference.
Ray, do we have time for another question? Or
absolutely. Go. No, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you to weigh in, and you may have to share some of this next segment because we are getting close on this segment. But when I think of paid content, digital content in particular, versus free, I immediately think of Rupert Murdoch and the bully pulpit he uses to try to promote this. Of course, he has a vested interest in trying to promote paywalls versus free content. And I'd like to get you to really elaborate on this. Maybe you can touch on it now. We can save a greater in-depth commentary for next segment. But what are your thoughts on paywalls versus free news? Is this something that may be easier to achieve throughout Europe versus the U.S.? I know we've got a lot of pushback coming at our being received over there.
I think it's exactly the same here as it is over there. There's merits to both arguments, and what we've got at the moment is a lose-lose situation. somebody has to pay for a journalist to go out to Afghanistan and Iraq, camera crew, satellite links, somebody to write it up, produce it, check that the editorial copy is factually accurate, and send it out. Those wages have to be met. There are costs. And of course, Rupert Murdoch and News International have every right to recover those costs and make a profit. The problem is that news has been given away for so many years on the, well, particularly online, but even if we look at TV, there's been an advertiser-funded model for a long, long period of time. And to start saying to people, now you have to pay for the news, it's very difficult to turn that into to value and money, for a perception is that it's free. My concern is that with a lot of the youngsters that I'm hearing and the surveys we see in the UK in particular, that 16 to 24-year-olds will never pay for news, is where are they going to get it from? Mm-hmm. And then the answer would come back on the surveys, we're going to get it from our friends on Facebook. So at that point, then bring the full circle, if you like, back to pop idol politics, because they're not getting the full picture, and we're living in an age of celebrity and pop culture, where more people vote in reality TV shows than they do in the general election for a prime minister.
That's sad.
Yeah, exactly.
That's terrible.
So we're ending up with a youth culture that is disengaged from the real world, and that can't be good for our future productivity, our creativity, our industries going forward. And we will gradually slip back. So somewhere in the middle, we have to find a model where the youth can get the information they want without paying for it too much, and the news internationals of this world can make a buck.
As we all have to here at the Advertising Show in our real jobs, right? Exactly. Jeremy is CEO of the Brand Council. Thebrandcouncil.com is the website. Let me make sure thebrandcouncil.com is correct. And also our European correspondent here on the Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. Rather a global show today. If you think about it, how we are connected is pretty kind of cool. You may think we're sitting here in the same room chatting. Of course, Jeremy's coming via phone from London. But what we're looking at is probably about a 12,000-mile distance between Brad and Jeremy, and of course myself being smack dab in the middle, about 6,000 miles away. That's pretty incredible. We are literally spanning the globe with this program. How cool is that? Technology is wonderful. On the Advertising Show, Jean Bliss, also wonderful here, talking about Netflix. And basically what she's suggesting is Netflix screwed up. When they started up, they did something really bad. But instead of hiding, much like the airlines do, they came back, confessed to their customers, and came back stronger than ever. So let's listen to that right now.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome, with your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Jean Bliss.
Netflix, the DVD by mail service with 10 million subscribers, experienced a severe technology glitch in 2008 that interrupted and halted shipping of DVDs to their subscribers. Netflix confessed immediately on their website, saying, "Important, your DVD shipments have likely been delayed." They didn't sweep the problem under the rug and didn't try to hide from the blame. Netflix followed up with emails to make sure that all customers heard the news. Not all customers even knew that there was a delay. Didn't matter. Netflix was honest in telling everyone, and swift in also extending an olive branch, automatically applying a credit to subscribers' next billing statements. New Netflix subscribers who had their very first shipments delayed received this message: "We recognize that this is not a good way to begin your Netflix membership and will automatically extend your free trial." Netflix knows that service is required to stay relevant in customers' lives. Do you confess to customers when something goes less than planned? The companies who are upfront and let all customers know when something goes wrong prepare everyone for a better experience. They show their true colors. They keep their customers. They grow and prosper.
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Jean Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Jean is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Jean's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
Thanks, Gene Bliss on the Advertising Show. Ray Schillingsbrad Forsyth. Jeremy Kent is with us. Jeremy is our European correspondent. You hear him weekly here at the Advertising Show. And today we get the opportunity to chat with him live. And Jeremy is the CEO of the Brand Council, an integrated agency providing clients with advertising and PR support all around the globe. So, Jeremy, welcome back. Good to have you for one more segment here.
Hi.
You know, Jeremy, some of our biggest hits here in the U.S. have come from Britain, all the way back to Monty Python and Benny Hill, for those that are old enough to remember, to more current hits such as The Office, American Idol. Yet I understand British TV programming has diminished in recent times and U.S. TV production has filled the gap. Explain.
Well, about the time that Benny Hill and Monty Python were at their peak, I think we had three television channels in the UK. And then up until about 1989, we had four. And then all of a sudden, we got Sky TV, and it went like America. We got hundreds of TV channels. But what happened was that there's a limited pot of advertisers to fund those TV networks. So whilst the money went up, by the time you'd stretched it across the new networks, what we tended to see was that they just weren't getting enough to commission quality programming themselves. And there may also have been other things like not such good writers being around or whatever, but certainly homegrown production didn't seem to be as prevalent as it was before. Now, most of the independent networks, the big ones like ITV, have a mandate from the government that they've got to produce homegrown programming, but every year they try and bash that down because it's a lot easier to buy in something from the States and put it on, fill the network that way, than it is to take the risk of commissioning something yourself. So what we're finding with the kids these days is if you look at their Sky Planner, which is a bit like your TiVo, the majority of things they've recorded are things like CSI, Dexter, NCIS. Whereas if you went back 10, 15 years, most of the things that people recorded were either UK-funded programs or some of the big Hollywood films. So there's been a big sea change in our culture. And I think it's not great, and that's not because we don't love your programming. It's because we're not getting that classic British sense of humor coming across in some of our comedies. I can't think of one great comedy that's come out in the last 10 years to match some of the ones you've talked about, certainly some of the ones we had through the 80s and early 90s.
You know, frankly, The Office is a good example of a program. I really did not like the American version of The Office. I love the British version. It was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And now I kind of like it. It's good and everything, and it's been a big hit over here. But what you guys had generated, to start that off was really, really good and had a lot of relevance here as well.
The Office is a classic example. Sorry.
When did that originally come out? It was back in the 90s, wasn't it, Jeremy?
No, it was about 2001, 2002.
Oh, it was?
The thing with The Office is it's a classic piece of British comedy, and it only runs for two series. And I think there were only 6 to 8 programs in each series. So where you get a season of 13, and if you look at MASH, you know, MASH went on for a generation.
Yeah.
But Monty Python, Fawlty Towers, The Office, and there's a few others like it. They just do a couple, and then it gets stale, so they move on to something else. What I'm talking about are things like, I don't know if you ever had a program like Only Fools and Horses, which ran for probably 20 years. And even when it was coming to the end of its run, it would still get the highest rating on Christmas Day. That kind of quality writing that you can run year on year, decade on decade, seems to have gone.
I understand this is a great time for sports sponsorships throughout Europe, and particularly the UK, and that Formula One racing seems to be hot these days. Talk a little bit about that, Jeremy.
Okay, well, it's a long time since I was in Formula One, but when we were out there, the way we went out to sponsors was really on brand awareness, logo awareness. We could certainly do cross-media deals. We could do something for you at the circuit, some promotions, a few PR campaigns about it. But there wasn't really any great substance there. But with social media, that's all changed because now you've got an opportunity to directly engage with the fans, assuming that your brand is correctly on the right car in the right place because it fits. You know, you're not an Apple brand when you should be putting motor oil out there. You've got a new conversation with these guys. You've found a new way to talk to them and for them to welcome you into their lives because you've got a shared passion. So I think social media has freed up a lot of opportunities for any brand that's in sponsorship, if you get it right, to engage in a conversation with new people.
You ever get a chance to drive any of the cars, Jeremy? Or
no, I didn't. I'm too big. I used to race cars as well. In fact, I raced against a couple of world champions, but I was about 5 stone heavier than them as a rugby player, and used to sit in the car like all cramped up. And I didn't have the talent, but I had a lot of fun in it.
I bet you do.
There were some great stories from there.
That's
including
great.
One on the Focus Stats, which you might like. A chap called Bernie Eccleston, who runs Formula One, produces a book each year called the Formula One Constructors Association Television Audiences. And some wag put up in about 93 that what he was doing was totaling up every opportunity to see and adding it up as a total audience. And they concluded on the Christmas issue that Bernie Eccleston had found that there was life on other planets, and they were all tuned into Formula One.
But just briefly, going back to your comments about sports programming, et cetera, I guess you're really addressing a lot of those issues you opened the program with in the first segment, talking about the challenges for effective pan-European campaigns, because I would think brands being plastered on a car, Formula One, or a jersey, soccer, whatever the case may be, cuts through potential cultural or language barriers that you would deal with, because the brand is the brand regardless of how it's communicated from a language point of view, correct?
Yeah, it is. And this brings us on to another point, because what you're doing is sharing the values, those brand values, with those individuals that also have a shared passion. And one of the things that obviously every corporation does is they put their brands on their balance sheet and they see themselves as the owners of that brand. But I've always believed that the real owners of a brand are the consumers. You know, we had a supermarket chain over here, well, not quite supermarket, but a store chain over here called Marks and Spencer's. And they were the darlings of the 1980s and early 90s, the Tory government under Margaret Thatcher. It was a brand that could do no wrong. They got everything right. They were bang on the money. And then they kind of lost touch with their public. And what you found was that their sales went down, the brand went down. People didn't go in the stores. They were shunned a bit. And what I would say is that the public had, at that point, had disowned the brand. Now, they've spent the last 5 to 10 years with some really solid, heavy-hitting brand advertising. It's been good stuff. And they've gradually built it all back up again. But they had a really tough decade because the public had disowned the brand. And that's where your sponsorship, those shared values, be it on social media or on a car or on a soccer jumper, can really come through, provided you've engaged with the right person and you're sharing their passion rather than just talking at them.
Well, you know, I know I speak for Ray when I say we are just so pleased with your ongoing regular effort as our correspondent in throughout Europe and based in London there, and you do just an admirable job for us each week. And you coming to us and us working up a piece that ended up being good for our listeners first, and secondly, good for the you, Jeremy, and us. I just want to thank you so much for your regular effort and, more importantly, for today's effort.
Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed being on, and I can't tell you how well-read I am with our local news now. Thanks very much.
Very good. We are sincerely happy to have you a part of the advertising show, Jeremy. Thank you so much. Go to thebrandcouncil.com if you'd like to find out more, and stay with us here. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on the advertising show. Nick Covey is going to be with us next week. Nick is director of Cross-Platform Insights, the Nielsen Company, and we look forward to that as well. The advertising show being powered by Schipul.com. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com, and a great platform called Tendency. Check it out at Schipul.com. Also, thanks to our sponsors and participants here, including Riva Software. Always happy to have them as a participant. And more importantly, tell a friend about the advertising show, as this reaches a global audience. So you can catch it anytime, obviously, via podcast, and anytime you want to listen to it as well. The advertising show, Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine, and you can visit them online at adage.com. The advertising show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, openad.net global creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit openad.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. Openad.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit openad.net today to find out more.